Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, and welcome to Pro EFT Radio with Lindsay Kenny, EFT Master. If you're new to EFT, please visit us at proeft.com to familiarize yourself with meridian tapping. Knowing the basics of EFT will help you get the most out of these shows. You'll find a wealth of free resources at proeft.com, including a free downloadable starter package. Now here's Lindsay.
Good evening, everyone. This is Lindsay Kenny on Pro EFT Radio. So you've come to the right place. And tonight I'm really happy to be interviewing one of my students and now someone I consider a friend, Sylvia Becker-Hill. Say hi, Sylvia.
Hi, everyone.
I asked Sylvia to be on the show tonight because she has a combination of talents and skills that are kind of unique. She's an executive coach. In fact, an executive change strategist is her title, which I really like. And what I loved about Sylvia when she started our courses last year was her passion, her intelligence, and her enthusiasm for EFT and how it could integrate into her business. I mean, she really attacked this with gusto. So Sylvia's got a bio a mile long. It seems like a lot of my guests do, and that's why they get selected as guests, because they have a lot going on in their life. But when I visited Sylvia's website to just kind of get an idea of the other side of her, I see the EFT side and not so much the executive strategist side, I was very impressed by what I saw. It's, by the way, her website address is sylviabeckerhill.com, and you can find that on the page where you found this link, on my media page at proeft.com, on the page for the Pro EFT Radio, and all over the place. And I'll say it again, it's Sylvia Becker-Hill, so Becker, and her real name is spelled Becker-Hill, so it's spelled just like it sounds. And to find out more about it, but wait till we're done with the show, because we've got a great show, and as I mentioned in the promo for this, this is very interactive. We're going to be doing a lot of things with you. So get your pen and paper, pencil and paper, pen and paper ready, your iPad or whatever you're going to use to write on, because we're going to give you some strategies and some handouts. In fact, the handouts are on my site on the media page. So be sure and download those handouts if you haven't already done so, because you need to interact with us, not just listen to this. So anyway, I could go on about Sylvia, but I love her wording and her trademarks, change champion. She says, change yourself to a champion, not a victim. You become a change champion. Excuse me if I slaughter this, Sylvia. Become a change champion, not a changed victim, you know, which I think is great. And so I'm anxious to hear what Sylvia has to say and how to turn our dreams into reality and how you can become your own executive of your life. So, Sylvia, let's get going now. You said hi to everybody already, so let me ask you a question, and then I'm just going to let you go with it, and I'll interact with you a lot as usual. But why are you so excited about Pro EFT or EFT, and how do you use it in your executive strategy?
Thank you for that question. I work as an executive coach since around 15 years, and more often I encountered some kind of wall against I was running or my clients. My clients come to me and they are, on a superficial level, they are very successful in their lives, but there's still something they want to change. Their career or their leadership style, or they have to deal with lots of change inside their companies. And very often, my huge toolbox, which is very powerful, I have several trainings, I use NLP, transaction analysis, and a lot of other tools, but still, sometimes there was some kind of wall where my clients and I, we didn't know what to do. Why can't we make progress here? And for me, EFT is now the missing link. For me, it feels like I have like a surgeon who is able to cut into his patient's brain. I can use EFT to really cut right to the core of the issue. And for me, EFT is now a real change accelerator. It makes the change of my clients much faster, much more efficient, and this is so close to my heart, sustainability is one of my most important values in my business. Since I use EFT in my coaching, the results, the change, the transformation my clients experience, it's much more sustainable. And for this, I'm so grateful. So I love my huge toolbox, but EFT is really now my magic pill. It's my favorite tool I use in nearly every coaching session.
Okay, good. Well, I know that you, well, you have kind of, your specialty is executives, or and your niche is executives, business owners, professional women, highly educated. So what we are talking about tonight, though, can be related, if I understand correctly, not just to that segment of the market, but to anyone. While you specialize in executives, I work with a lot of executives, too, but the general public as well. I want to make sure that people understand that they're going to be able to use the materials you're going to share with us because they're executives of their own lives and their own families.
This comes from another value I care about, which is professionalism. I perceive a lot of people, they distinguish between their private life and their business life, their career, and they act very professional in their career or their businesses, but they don't act professional in their private life.
Mm-hmm.
And for me, that is the question, why not? So one message I want to spread with you tonight is really to everyone, when you take on professionalism as a value also for your private life, you can become the executive change strategist for your own life. And if you like, Lindsay, we could right jump into the handout, and I start with the first part so that people can make their notes so that they understand what we both mean and discussed around that in our pre-call.
Okay, well, that's what
we do that?
Yes, let's have people get their handouts out, and I labeled them, I believe, let's see, which one, not the iceberg, but what is the other one, the text one?
It starts with the title, Be the Executive Change Strategist of Your Own Life.
Mm-hmm.
And it's three pages, two with a lot of text and blanks to fill out, and the third page with the big picture we come later to.
Okay.
So everyone is ready?
Yes, and I looked at these blanks and I went, well, what I put in there? I don't know. What is this? I don't know.
I'm a little bit naughty. Yeah. I use these kind of handouts to guide people's attention because nowadays we all are multitasking. We are listening to these kind of radio shows while
mm-hmm.
we cook, while we drive. So I want to make sure, because the content is so valuable, I want to guide people's attention to really, really get it.
Okay, so I have to tell you how I felt on that first one. You are a catalyst to be a change junkie and not a change monkey. So is that the right answer?
Perfect, exactly. So let's fill in number 1A.
Mm-hmm.
So as an executive change strategist, the first thing is you are committed.
Ah.
And committed is that you make a promise to yourself that not only your career or business, that really your whole life, you make a commitment that your life can be the best it could be. We all have such a huge potential and most people don't live up to it. So you are committed. Committed is the first word you have to fill in
mm-hmm.
to be a change. What did you say, monkey? No,
uh-huh.
not a change monkey, a change champion, which means someone who masters change, someone who owns change, who can have as much control as possible, as much responsibility as possible. You are successful in change. That means to be a change champion and not a change victim. So the two last words in the first line are champion and victim to fill in.
Okay, I get it. So I use some similar language when I'm tapping with people and have them become their own hero instead of a victim.
Yes.
And
yes.
they really get that because they'll do anything for other people and not necessarily for themselves.
Yes.
And, Sylvia, because this is a personal thing, I would suggest from the listeners that they get proactive and make sure you write that in. But I would change, and since it's your kind of contract with yourself, change those first words to I am committed to be a change champion.
Wonderful.
And
yes.
not a change victim.
I love that. That's a great idea. Yes.
Okay, that's great. I like the start. I like champion and victim better than monkey and junkie or whatever. Okay, go ahead.
Okay, so the next thing, I know a lot of people don't like that so much, but sorry, this is a condition to become a change champion, which is you choose to take on, and now it comes, 100% responsibility
mm-hmm.
for your own experiences. I know this is not always so sexy because it's much nicer to blame others,
mm-hmm.
to say my husband, my boss, my neighbor, my mother, whoever is at fault here. But I'm sorry, if you want to be a change champion, you have to take on 100% responsibility. And I'm very radical with that. I even say, even in situations where something is happening where, let's say, from a legal perspective or a circumstance perspective, you don't have 100% responsibility, it's smart to take on 100% responsibility because then you have more power.
Mm-hmm.
Then you are putting yourself in the power spot and you declare, I can change that because I take on 100% responsibility. If you don't do that, if you, you know, only 90% or 95%, you still give power to other people or the circumstances.
Oh, Sylvia, that's so important. And I would say most people are more like 50-50. I hear, really, I hear all the time people saying, well, I'm just going to see what happens, or let's wait and see, or whatever tomorrow may bring. And while we can't control what's going on in Libya and Japan and the world and the wars and all of that, we can be in control of ourselves. And so if we choose to take and be 100% responsible or accountable for our own experiences, it takes all of that guesswork out. It's that how are they going to respond? What are they going to do? What's going to happen to me tomorrow? As opposed to, no, here's a line I like to use: no matter what happens on this next deal with whatever people are concerned about, no matter what happens, I choose to make it work for me. And that's
excellent.
Being 100% responsible.
Yes, and I take on your suggestion from the first line. Please, everyone, scratch off "you choose to" and just write "I." I take on 100% responsibility. And when you write that, when you change the sentence, try to make it as a small ritual that you really feel that.
Mm-hmm.
And feel the power which already lays in this declaration to say, I take on 100% responsibility for my own experiences.
Okay, so here's, well, we're not going to do it right now because we're going to tap a little bit later. Here's a tapping point that's going to come up for people. Uh-oh, then who do I blame? What excuse do I give? So there's going to be some fears that come up around that, or beliefs.
Yes.
Beliefs that I don't have control, I can't change my own destiny, or fear that, that you're gonna blame yourself, or it's gonna get worse, or whatever your fears and beliefs are about being 100% accountable or responsible, maybe something you need to tap on.
Most of my clients, they have a personality, they very often react with anger. They become even angry on me. Like, come on, coach, what are you telling me? I am 100% responsible? No, whoever he is, I'm sorry, the asshole. You know, it's always someone else they try to blame. So when I try to push them to take that on, their first reaction is resistance, expressed in anger, and they project that onto me, but I'm so used to that I can, with some humor and joking around that and doing some exercises, most 9 out of 10 I can turn around. But I'm honest, 1 out of 10 they don't want to take it on, and then I have to say, I'm sorry, then I can't coach you.
Very good.
That's
good.
I can't coach people who don't take this on.
And here's a fine line to that. The operative word in this, besides the important word of responsibility, is the word experiences. So while you may not be responsible that your child gets run over by a truck, and I don't mean to be gruesome there, I just mean something that awful that happens. You're not responsible for that, but you're responsible for your experience about it.
Yes.
So someone might get angry and want to kill somebody, the drunk driver that hit their child or kicked their dog or fired them. So you might not be responsible for what happens to you, but you're 100% or should be 100% responsible for how you deal with it, your experiences of
exactly.
it.
Exactly. Yes, exactly. Oh, my gosh, we could make just one whole show around that.
I know.
But we have to move on.
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay, so the next line, number C, is you set, and now comes the word, goals
mm-hmm.
for different areas in your life. This is another thing. Most people, again, they are professional in business or in their career. They set career goals, business goals, but their private life, like losing weight or changing where they live or buying a new house or whatever it is, they forget to set goals.
Mm-hmm.
They have these vague dreams, or they want something, they have wishes, But it's so different to set a specific goal, write it down with a date, and to do that not only for one area in your life. Let's say I plan my vacation this summer till the end of May, but to do it really for all different areas in your life.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
This is crucial. Otherwise, you can't, as the name says, change strategies. You can't create any plans or any strategy when you don't have a goal, when you don't know in which direction you want to change something.
That's right. I still, you know, I can't help it, but I would add one word, and that is constantly set goals. Because if somebody meets a goal, then they go, okay, I'm done with that, or they've got two or three goals, and as those come to fruition, you need to then set another goal for that same thing or something else so that you are constantly – I've heard described by people that did psycho-cybernetics, as a matter of fact, that describe success as the constant moving toward positive, achievable goals.
Beautiful.
Not reaching of them, it's the constant movement. So when you set a goal, you set a different one another place. Okay?
Yes. Good. Perfect. Wonderful. And very closely linked with that is that you make yourself, and now comes the word, accountable by measuring your progress. So the two words are accountable and progress.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know who said that first, but there is this quote out there, what you can't measure, you can't change.
That's right.
And this is also something where people first have some resistances, or they say, I don't know how to measure that because it's an emotional goal, it's something with soft factors. But sometimes, yes, it needs some kind of translation, like what does it mean when I follow this goal and how will I feel. But everything you can measure if things get better or worse. Maybe you can't measure them in pounds, or miles per hour and these kind of metric things, but you can measure the progress. And that's so important that you have a feedback system in place to know if you're heading towards the right direction.
Well, sure. You can, if it's an emotion, if you want to feel better, have peace of mind or something like that, then you say, well, where am I now? And if you say, well, I'm not at the complete peace of mind, then use a subjective measurement. Do you feel lighter or more relaxed or calmer? Do you feel better than where you were last week? Are you going and making some progress toward letting go of the grief or whatever it might be? And that's a measurement.
Yeah. Okay. And now the next thing is something people who like to cook, they will love that. You create a plan. It's like a cooking recipe and follow it through.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, hello, I'm not a very good cook, so when I cook, I grab a great cooking book, I follow the plan, and the food tastes great. So if you really have big goals, I mean, tiny small goals like emptying out your closet, maybe they don't need a plan. But most people, when they dream big and allow themselves to create goals out of their dreams, they really need a plan. So that they can feel not overwhelmed by the big size of their goals, because a plan breaks it down into single, simple steps.
Okay.
That's the beauty of a plan.
Oh, now, and another tapping point that comes up for people, they'll say, I don't know how to do a plan. I don't know where to get started. And as long as you're saying, I don't know how, then you can't go. So when you're about to make a plan, you might want to say, instead of I create a plan, say I allow myself or I surprise myself by coming up with a great plan.
Exactly. And seriously, take a cookbook and see there. They have first a portion where they say ingredients. You can do that too. You can make a list of resources you need to reach your goal. These are the ingredients for your wonderful meal. And then look again in the cooking book. Then they give you the measurements, how much of each resource you need.
Yeah.
You can do the same. And then they describe exactly what to cut, what to throw, what to combine, how long to cook it. So it's really like a cooking recipe for your dreams.
Okay, good.
So then, as an executive change strategist, this is something very crucial, and people try to avoid that. You learn from your, and now comes the word, mistakes.
Yep.
Please don't, and this is another tipping point, don't be afraid to make mistakes, because mistakes always carry the gift of learning in them. If you wouldn't make mistakes, that would mean your goal is not big enough.
Mm-hmm.
Then you still play safe. If your goal is really a dream of you, you will make mistakes. Please anticipate, expect to make mistakes and learn from them. And then adjust your, and now we have three blanks, adjust your thoughts, your emotions, and actions. I repeat, your thoughts, emotions, and actions.
Okay.
Because somewhere there in the thoughts or your emotions or in your actions was the source of making the mistake.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So when you make a mistake, say, hi, it's wonderful, I made a mistake, opportunity to learn, analyze it. What did I think here? What were my emotions? What did I do? What do I need to adjust here? What do I need to change in order not to make that mistake again?
You know, that's a great point about people are afraid of what if I screw up. Then say yay, because in that screw up, you're going to learn something. If nothing more, then I'm not going to do that again. I remember one of my favorite quotes, and I even almost remember the date that I learned it. It was in June of 1987 when at a Tony Robbins seminar, he said, how would your life be different if you knew you could never fail? And people would consider mistakes as failures. And I went, wow, that would be great. And he went on to say, you can't fail. It's just a result. Just look at it as a mistake that didn't work, and then you just try it another way. You alter your plan or your goal and make it fix, which is what you're saying. Look at your mistakes and say, instead of I failed, say, it was a mistake. That didn't work. Let me adjust some things and go another direction.
I strongly believe that sometimes more important than reaching the goal is becoming the person you are becoming in the process. Your personal growth in the process can become much more important than really reaching the goal.
That's right.
If you don't make mistakes and if you don't learn, you don't change, you don't grow. And this would be really sad, because this is all about. The goals are really not what's at the core. At the core is our personal development, that we grow into our highest potential. And without making mistakes, we can't do that.
Very good, very true. Oh, this next one I could really get myself in trouble with if I use the wrong word here. So what is this one? Instead of blank and blank yourself, uh-oh.
Instead of, and you love that, instead of blaming and judging yourself.
Ah, good.
Because when people make mistakes, the first thing is they blame and judge themselves. Oh, I'm an idiot. I shouldn't have done it in the first place. How good I am, blah, 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 blah. So please, instead of blaming and judging yourself, now comes the next. You love and respect yourself.
You're very good.
Very, it's totally aligned with EFT. And the next one is aligned again with that, so it's a whole logic in these sentences. We are now at age, sentence age. You focus on the positive, the fun, the progress. I repeat, you focus on the positive, the fun, the progress. And again, people have this negative habit to focus on the negative and on the blame against themselves or others. Please don't do that. If you want to be a change champion, stop it. Focus on the positive, the fun, and the progress.
All right. Let me give a quick example. I had somebody emailed me this week that I don't know. I'll call her Susie. And she was saying, I want to be an EFT practitioner, but I don't think I can do that because I'm not getting results on my issue. Let's say it was ringing in the ears or something. And so it just isn't working for me, and I'm really disappointed. I wanted to help others with this. And I wrote back and said, so has it not worked on anything for you? But she said, I must be a terrible practitioner if I can't even work it and do it myself. So she was judging herself and really beating herself up, saying, I know EFT works, but it's not working on my tinnitus. And I wrote back and said, I'd focus on what it has done and how you were able to solve all of those issues and how much more you can help with other people instead of the one thing that isn't working. And she just wrote back and very sweetly said it really helped because she was judging herself, beating herself up, instead of focusing on the positive that EFT, in fact, is very effective.
I think that's a wonderful tapping point again, because sometimes focusing on the negative is a very successful strategy the subconscious mind brings in place to keep us small. It's a protection strategy.
Yeah, it gives you an excuse. A negative is, well, this doesn't work, this sucks, this is, I'm not any good at it. It's an excuse. Yeah, so focusing on, especially when you're in that, those two at G and H are really, they're very, very good, Sylvia. Instead of blaming and judging yourself, you love and respect yourself, focus on the positive and the fun and the progress.
see the good in it instead of what the bad, the mistake, or what isn't working. Very good.
Yes. And the next one is just a repetition of something we already said. You are committed to, now the two words, grow and learn. So you are, sure, also committed to reaching your goals, but the deeper commitment must be that you grow and learn. And Jay, please, the last one, you celebrate your results.
Oh, I like
that.
It's
so sad for me, especially most of my clients are high achievers, they are very busy. So as soon they have a goal reached, they just make a tick on their list and jump to the next goal.
Yeah.
You have to have a time of transition between pursuing different projects, between different goals, and you have to celebrate in order to recognize who you have become in the journey. Otherwise, you miss yourself. You accomplish a lot, but you miss yourself, and you don't experience the joy of fulfillment. And this is one reason why so many people are out there who are superficially very successful, wealthy, etc., but they are not happy because they are not fulfilled because they never celebrate their results.
Yeah, I think that's true. And while a lot of people might choose to celebrate with a margarita, which sounds good to me, you could just stop and be great and tap on yourself and say, I acknowledge myself for, quick example, I just had a client that wanted to stop drinking and or at least stop drinking 4 or 5 Manhattans a night. And he did 10 days. We had a session 10 days later. In our second session, he says, I swear I've had only a glass or two of wine every night, not one Manhattan, and no desire for it. And so we did a round of tapping on saying, thank you, buddy. I'll call him that. Thank you, buddy, for staying clean and sober and doing such a good job and making it easy to say no. I wasn't even tempted. He was tapped in a little celebration of himself, and he just felt all tingly all over. He really liked that acknowledgement, and it's something he hadn't done other than just say, well, I did this. It was sort of a statement, I did this, but not the actual celebration. There's a difference.
Yes. And I know a lot of people who struggle with burnout. And one reason why they drove themselves into a burnout is they never stopped to celebrate.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, looking at my watch, we have to get moving. The next part is
by the way, Sylvia, let me just add this. I can see you have a lot of good material here, and I don't want to rush you, and I certainly don't want to cut out my wonderful stories that I like.
Yes.
So don't worry, we'll go an hour, and if we get done, if we're not done in an hour, then we'll end the radio show, but we'll record an extra 15 or 20 minutes, whatever we need to finish, in a separate recording. Is that okay? Does that take some pressure off you?
Oh, wonderful, wonderful.
Okay,
then people also know that if we can't get it done, the whole handout here, they will get it on your webpage in the recording. Perfect.
That's right, sure. Okay, good.
Thank you. Okay. So we talked about executive change strategy. So with that word change, I have to talk a tiny bit about change management. Change management is such a big word, corporate world. So I want to make it really simple and easy and brought some of my pearls, what I consider the most important things everyone should know about change management. And if you don't like the word change management, forget it. It's just about how to understand what change means and how it's related to us humans, and to really understand where are my spots of power, where I as a human being, when I want to change something, can do something about it.
Mm-hmm.
So, and the first thing, it's something, I mean, everyone knows it intellectually, but I think people forget it in their everyday life. So I say it here again, sentence 2A, everything constantly changes.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, really everything. So if we wake up in the morning with a bad mood and we are totally identified with it and think the whole day will go downhill, hello, even our bad mood can't stay forever.
That's right.
Or if we are sick or we have a problem or we have a huge debit card bill to pay, everything constantly changes.
Mm-hmm.
And I think this is something very soothing in this thought, and we have to remind ourselves again and again, everything, even the beautiful things, everything constantly changes. This is just a given, period.
It is. And it's interesting how it fits right into something that I watched just before talking with you today, Sylvia, and that's one of my friends is a
Hollywood producer and writer, and was involved in the Golden, and was a writer and producer for the Golden Girls and Laverne and Shirley and other pretty big Hollywood blockbuster TV shows. And he's got a blog that I'll send to you called Boomer Alley. And when I say send you, I'm going to put this on my website. And it's a little funny. It's a little 5 or 10 minute clip that he does every week. This week was on change and why people need this change. He said all the people are complaining because they've put new exercise equipment in their gym and all of the things, how our lives is changing. And instead of resisting it, and he does it in a humorous way, embrace change. And so it really dovetails into what you're saying. And so I'll post that on my media page, too, for you guys to listen to.
Yeah, okay. So the next one is something which I consider one of the most important insights you can have around change, and I call it the paradox of change.
Mm-hmm.
And it goes like this. Whatever you want to change, you have first to, and now comes a difficult word, you have first to acknowledge it the way it is. So to acknowledge it doesn't mean that you have to completely accept it the way it is for the future, that you're not allowed to change it. But even more, if you really want to change it, you have to acknowledge it first. And let's do a very quick, short, simple exercise.
Okay.
So to all our listeners, maybe you are sitting at your desk on a chair or you're laying comfortably on your sofa because it's EST in the evening already. Maybe you are driving, which I don't hope because you can't write down anything while you're driving.
Yeah.
Anyway, wherever you are, please take one of your hands and put your hand gently on a surface near you. It could be your desk, it could be a table, it could be the arm piece of your sofa. Lay your hand gently on the surface without adding any pressure from your hands to the surface, and just feel how the surface feels like when you gently put your hand on it.
Mm-hmm.
Just feel. Just do that. Okay? So take your hand off again of the surface. Shake it a little bit, and now put it again back on the surface, but really put as much pressure as you can through your hand to the surface. Try to push away your desk or your table or your sofa, whatever surface you are having your hand on, and feel the difference. Can you feel suddenly a change in the material, that the material somehow feels harder, or can you feel that it's pushing against your hand? How does it feel, Lindsay? How do you feel that?
Well, it's difficult. I mean, it takes a lot of energy to do that, to push that.
Wow, it takes energy. This is when we address pressure against something or someone, pressure comes back. It's like one of nature's law. If you are gentle, then there's just gentleness. But if you exude pressure, you get pressure back. So if you want to change something, you have first to acknowledge it the way it is. And maybe the next sentence, number C, even makes it more clear what I mean. Acknowledgement doesn't mean you have to accept it the way it is in the future. It means you label it as it is without judgment. I repeat, the word you have to fill in the first line was to accept it the way it is, and now judgment. And this I call the Rumpelstiltskin effect. I'm from Germany, as you know.
Really?
And we have these great fairy tales collected by the Brother Grimm. Do you know Rumpelstiltskin?
Absolutely. Every American kid knows that, yeah.
Okay, so how does the princess get her power back regarding Rumpelstiltskin? What does she have to do?
Was this the one where she had to cut off her hair? Or cut off
her ear? No, it's a story where she has to figure out his name.
Oh,
his name. Soon as she figures out his name, which is Rumpelstiltskin, this strange, difficult to pronounce word, he loses all his power and disappears.
And she can
keep the gold, and she can keep her baby she created with her lovely prince.
Ah.
So the point is, when you label things, when you put a name on it, when you accept it and acknowledge it the way it is without judgment, you can take the power out of them and get it back to you.
Mm.
And then you can change things. And most people, they jump too quickly into the change. They resist first the situation I'm in. Let's say, I'm overweight, I hate my body the way I look, I have to change it. Or, I hate my credit card debts, I have to get money into my bank accounts. So they focus on already what they need to do in order to change it, instead of first making peace the way it is, labeling it without judgment.
Yeah, that
is really crucial. And tapping here is, say.
No, go ahead, Sylvia, I'm sorry.
No, it's just that tapping here again works miracles in that point.
Yeah, this is another tapping place, to tap away. In other words, that I use, the opposite of acceptance is resistance, and people will resist what they have, and it's sort of like they focus on their debt, they focus on their weight or their clutter or whatever their husband or whatever they're trying to get rid of, or wife, and it just makes the situation worse. When they're focused, they're resisting it, they're pushing against it, which drains your energy and keeps you focused on the problem as opposed to where you want to be. And your judgment about it goes with it. As you're resisting, you're saying, I don't like this, it's not good for me, I hate it, I don't like the way I feel, and
yes.
So I think I'll just keep focusing on it.
Yes, and with every negative judgment you just said, you give power to the thing you want to change,
right.
And you make it stronger. And there's this wonderful saying here in the United States, what you resist persists.
Right.
So sentence B and C, you could summarize both sentences with that quote, what you resist persists.
Right. And I know that people will say, so what, am I supposed to ignore it? Well, we're just the opposite. We're saying acknowledge it, but that doesn't mean you're accepting it. You know, I have this problem. Now, then you focus on the solution as opposed to judging yourself or judging the other person. You acknowledge that you have the problem and accept it doesn't mean that you stay in it. So, no, it's not about ignoring it and it goes away.
Oh, gosh, no. This could be dangerous. I mean, remember the story from Rumpelstiltskin. If the princess would have ignored him, he would have taken her baby.
Yeah.
So that was really a dangerous situation for her as a mother. But by knowing his name, by giving the label without judgment, hey, your name is Rumpelstiltskin, bang, poof, and he disappears.
Yeah.
Ignoring is dangerous. You have to face things and label them and acknowledge them for what they are right now. That doesn't mean that you are not going to change them. But in order to change them, this is the first step. I know it's a paradox, but this is just the way change works.
Good. Okay.
Okay, so that was about resistances. And now let's move forward to get really into change. So we have like two little things before that. Number D. It goes like this. People don't, now comes the word, suffer from not knowing, the second word, what to do. I say it again. People don't suffer from not knowing what to do. Second sentence, they suffer from not doing what they know they should do.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, I mean, ask people if they want to lose weight, do they know how they need to lose weight? Sure, but they don't do it.
Mm-hmm.
Do
that's
people
true.
Know how to pay back their credit card bills? Sure, they know how to do it. So it's not about the knowledge, it's not about the information. It's trying to understand what keeps us from doing what we know we should do. And again, I love EFT for the power to help us overcoming our resistances, to get into the doing, into the action.
Yeah.
So, and this is linked with the next sentence, E, often you, it's now again the word, know what you don't know. I say it again, often you know what you don't know. What blocks, that's the next word, what blocks you are the things you don't know that you don't know them. I know it's a bit tricky. I say it again. What blocks you are the things you don't know that you don't know them. It's our blind spots. Everything, what you really know, this is never a block. This is, again, when you face things, when you're able to label them, when you're able to talk about them with a friend, with a coach, with a therapist. These are not really the things which blocks you. The things which block you are those you don't know that you don't know them. And that's the reason why we sometimes need help, because we all have our blind spots. And someone else sees it. If you have tomato sauce from your last spaghetti on your collar, I can see them. But you, because they are under your chin, you can't see the tomato sauce spots. But I see them. That's the reason why working with an EFT practitioner or a coach is so powerful, because this person, the other person, can see your blind spots. We all have them.
So, Sylvia, I was having trouble with the sentence. So I think it may just be grammatical between German and English. But if you take the word them off of the end, then it flows a little bit better. Your blocks are the things that you don't know that you don't know.
Exactly.
I have practitioners that say this phrase over and over in my level one or two classes. They come in and they've already been practicing pro EFT or pro EFT, and they do level one and two so they can get to the level three. And they, at the end of the first day, they say, I didn't know how much I didn't know. Because you can't know it if you don't know it. I mean, it's a silly example, but my father-in-law, when he was alive, my parents, when they were alive, were going on a dream all the way around the world trip for a month. And so John, my father-in-law, said, why would they want to go around the world when they could just stay here in San Francisco? Well, I don't understand, because he didn't know. He'd never been anywhere. You know, so he didn't know what was out there that he could have. You know, he's in his 80s, yes. And he hadn't experienced life. And here's the problem. Once you know all of those things, you kind of go, oh, my gosh, need to do something about that.
Sometimes not knowing can be a blessing.
Well, that's right. That's why some women or men pretend they don't know that their spouse is having an affair, because once they acknowledge it, they feel compelled, then they have to do something about it. So it's sort of like burying their head in the sand, I don't know. But then those are blocks to you getting what you want. You can't, just by pretending they're not there doesn't make them go away.
Exactly. So we have, again, ignorance can be dangerous. So we have to, as a executive change strategist for our own life, we have to have the courage to face what's going on. And sometimes that means to acknowledge, I have a blind spot here. I don't know why I can't change that. So please, I need some help from outside. Can anyone tell me what I'm not seeing? Because I don't know right now what I don't know.
Yeah, that's good.
And that's a very vulnerable, very difficult spot, but it's also very freeing and powerful as soon you put yourself into it.
Okay. Okay, good. I think that puts us on F, right?
Yes.
Okay.
And this is now one of my favorites, because this here starts the change accelerator. F for successful, lasting, efficient change. I repeat the three words to put in. For successful, lasting, efficient change, you need brain alignment.
Oh.
What is brain alignment? Brain alignment means your new word, conscious mind, and your subconscious mind are both working together to support you in reaching your goal. I repeat that. Brain alignment means your conscious mind and your subconscious mind are both working together to support you in reaching your goal. Let me give you a great metaphor to explain what I mean with that. When you are driving your car, you have one foot on the gas pedal, and if you have your second foot on the brake, what happens?
You don't go anywhere.
Exactly. Or it gets quite bumpy. You make these funny, like I call it stuttering, you know, you make a jump with your car and then you move, and maybe you make a jump to the right or left, you bang into something. And this is what happens to a lot of people when they try to change something. They move forward very slowly. It's very painful and bumpy. And sometimes they crash into something left and right. They get distracted. And this is because consciously they put their foot on the gas pedal. They are clear, I want to change that. But subconsciously, they have a lot of good reasons not to change, so they put one foot on the brake.
Mm-hmm.
And brain alignment means you put both feet suddenly on the gas pedal. What happens when you take from the first situation the second foot back from the brake onto the gas pedal with the other one?
Well, then you start going forward.
You start going and very fast and very efficient and very straight and much more powerful and safe.
Well, and this is where we talk about this, as you know, all the time, the subconscious resistance to change. That's what we're talking about, is changing, and that subconscious will want to keep you from changing because it's afraid of what's on the other side. It needs an excuse, or it needs to stay safe, all of those things. So that's another tapping place and point, is that is tapping away that subconscious resistance.
And this also explains why EFT is such a wonderful, powerful tool for coaching, because most coaches, they work with the conscious mind, and a lot of tools in the coaching world are addressing the conscious mind. And EFT is so powerfully addressing the subconscious mind. And you need to create this brain alignment. You have to have your conscious mind and your subconscious mind as a supporter in reaching your goal. Otherwise, you have this horrible, bumpy, crashing, moving forward experience.
Mm-hmm. Okay, that's good.
Okay, because we have to make for this show a break in 5 minutes, Lindsay, where shall we focus on?
No,
shall
actually, we because we didn't start, we've still got 15 minutes almost.
Perfect. Okay, so then let's do the stuff about the brain and a bit of tapping before we close here.
Okay.
Do the iceberg and the extra recording we do.
Perfect.
Okay. So we have now the brain alignment, and this brings us to the third part of here, all this information. This is some pearls of wisdom about your amazing brain. This is, I don't know where it comes from, but I'm very passionate about this organ. Most people, they never care about their brain. I mean, they wash their hair several times a week. They brush, hopefully, their teeth 2 times a day. But who the heck does brainwashing? Do you brainwash your brain once a week or maybe once a year or never? The word brainwashing has this negative connotation to all these spy thrillers and these horror torturing scenes in movies. But I really love the concept that sometimes we need to wash our brain in order to get all the crap out of our subconscious mind, which is blocking us.
Mm-hmm.
So what I want people to understand, and this is now what I ask you to put in the sentences, A, the brain is, the first word, plastic. What does it mean? In the neuroscience, till around 10, 15 years ago, there was a paradigm where the scientists believe the brain grows when we are young, and it's around our fifth, sixth birthday, it's like grown out, and then it doesn't change much. And if you have an accident or you have a disease when you are later, when you're older, when you're an adult, well, bad luck, you can't do anything about it. So now, since around 15 years, we know this old paradigm was not correct. With all these new machines we have and all the measurements we can do, we can observe now living brains. In the past, scientists mainly had access to dead brains. Now we can observe living brains so much better, and we discovered the brain is plastic. The sentence goes on, it changes constantly and can change itself till you die. So the three words in the sentence are plastic, constantly, and die. So, and that is so fascinating. So whatever is stored in your subconscious mind, whatever is hardwired there, maybe since 40 years, 50 years, because you learned it as a very young child, you can change that because of the amazing ability of the brain to rewire itself. It does it anyway constantly. It depends on what you eat, what you experience, what you feel. All that has a constant impact on your brain. And we use that in change management, and especially in EFT, to support our dreams and our goals.
Okay.
So the next thing, yeah?
Uh-huh.
You want to add something? Yeah? The next sentence, number B, the conscious mind is dominated by the subconscious mind. I know this is sometimes shocking for people because people believe, oh my gosh, we humans, we are, you know, the crown of the evolution, we have a free will, we make conscious choices. I'm sorry to tell you, our conscious mind is dominated by the subconscious mind.
Oh, by far. Huge, big time.
Yes, and most people don't realize that, especially in the business world when people believe they rely on numbers and Excel sheets and rational arguments. I'm sorry to tell them, this is not true.
Well,
our subconscious mind is running the show.
I can't really remember who I was reading this, but it was a doctor yesterday. It was talking about this factor, and I know Bruce Lipton talks about it all the time, that
yes,
the subconscious mind is sort of like the RAM on your computer, limited storage capabilities, limited processing capabilities, and the subconscious is like the processor, the CPU, the big
yes,
part of it. That's the muscle, and where the dominates 90 or 95% of our choices and everything that happens to us. I'm sure you're getting there anyway. I'm probably getting
yes,
ahead of it. But, yeah,
perfect.
I'm disagreeing. It's absolutely
yes,
true.
Yeah, and the next sentence, number C, is exactly saying that the conscious, it's a word to fill in, the conscious mind can process only a few pieces to work to fill in few pieces of information at a time. And our brain is just a genius. So it has these two operating systems, the conscious mind and the subconscious mind. It's just a brilliant creation. So it stores what we don't need. It's like on a PC. Sometimes when my PC gets very slowly and I have to go into this task manager, I'm amazed how many backup programs in the back of what I can't see on the screen are working constantly the whole time.
Yeah.
And this is like our subconscious mind. So D says a bit more about the subconscious mind. It remembers everything. I say it again, really everything. I mean, our whole life, every second, every time we breathed, we felt something, everything, our whole life is stored in the subconscious mind. And the subconscious mind cannot distinguish between, and now comes the two important words, past and future. I say it again, it cannot distinguish between past and future and lives always in the now. This is the reason why, for example, when I got traumatized when I was, let's say, a six-year-old child, when I started school and my peers in my class maybe laughed about me because I said something stupid, and so now I'm a 44-year-old woman, try to make a presentation in front of the board, and I say again something not so intelligent and someone smiles, just seeing that smile on the face of people in the boardroom could trigger my old trauma, and I'm not any longer a 44-year-old adult woman. I suddenly react like a five-year-old who re-experienced her old trauma.
Mm-hmm.
Because for my subconscious mind, it's happening now. There is no past. Everything is happening now.
Yeah, that makes sense.
And this is a crucial point why EFT has such a power, because we can access now very old things stored in our memory, in our subconscious mind.
Mm-hmm.
And the next sentence is, it also cannot distinguish between reality and imagination. I repeat, between reality and imagination. For the subconscious mind, both are the same. And this is, you know, all of the listeners, you know that when you go into a movie and it's a really good one, let's say it's a comedy, what do? You laugh a lot. If it's a romance, maybe a dramatic one, maybe you cry and you feel and you know it's a movie. Your conscious mind knows it's not real. But what do you do for one hour, 90 minutes, whatever, how long the movie is running? You are experiencing it. You are feeling it. You are part of the experience, because your subconscious mind can't distinguish between reality and imagination.
Yeah.
It's
why, using the movie theory as well, these actors that we've seen in many movies, will maybe one of them will die in a scene that we've gotten attached to, and we cry because...
Yes.
A character on the film that's very much alive in his real life dies, because your brain, your mind can't distinguish the difference. To it, it's feeling the emotion as if it's really happening. You're so sad that character died, or the dog, or whatever it might be, or those scenes that they put you into, the scene where you're going up and down the streets of San Francisco or a roller coaster type ride, and your stomach turns as if you're in that car or that amusement ride. Because your poor little subconscious doesn't know, it can't tell the difference. It's grooving as if it's really happening.
Yes, exactly. And this explains also the power of visualizations. A lot of coaches or healers and therapists work with that, because when you visualize already reaching your goal, experiencing how you feel, how you stand, how you breathe, what you smell, what you hear, you are anticipating a future which is not there yet.
Mm-hmm.
But because your subconscious mind can't distinguish between your imagination and reality, and not between past, future, and now, the subconscious mind believes it's happening already right now.
Mm-hmm.
So it aligns every effort to bring you there.
Right.
That's the power of visualization.
Well, and it serves a couple of purposes. One, while you're daydreaming and visualizing, it feels good. You're experiencing the motions as if it is happening, although it clearly isn't happening. You're just imagining it, but it feels good. Now, that feeling good is the law of attraction stuff. You need to be in that right feeling mood place to attract what it is you're looking for, that your dream, your desire. So the two fit so well together, and your
yes.
subconscious is striving to make that thing happen that you're dreaming about because it needs to be congruent. It's a really magical thing, but it's actually scientific, and I after
yes.
experiencing it a gazillion times, I totally get it.
Yes, and I think this is an important point I try to make here. A lot of people think this is all hooky, fruky, woo-ha, whoa, strange stuff. No, it isn't. It's all scientifically proven. You can measure that. You can see the impact on brains from visualizations.
Uh-huh,
and,
awesome.
And you can see how brain areas can be rewired, especially after accidents where pieces of the brain were destroyed. How visualization can help to restore and rewire physically parts of the brain.
Yes.
So it's not any strange whatever you how you call it. It's scientific proven.
Well, and here's a simple example of you were talking a moment ago about some people looking at their surroundings, putting their hand out on a chair or table, wherever they are. If you look around, every single thing in the room or the car or the outside, unless it's a natural tree or something, but everything that's man-made that you can see, like the perch my cats roll around on, my exercise bike, your widescreen TV, the computer, was all somebody's imagination at one point.
Yes.
It all started with their imagination and then became reality because of the process they went through to make it that dream come true. It had to start with somebody's imagination and somebody's subconscious saying, but that doesn't exist. How can I create it? And then
yes,
it just happened.
Yeah, well, how can anyone not fall in love with their own brain? I mean, isn't it an amazing organ? It's so
yeah,
wonderful.
That's right.
So, yeah, last point to that. In Germany, and I heard United States as well, you have the saying, where there is a will, there's a way.
Mm-hmm.
And this is sometimes, this is really nearly brutal for people when they try to change something and it's not working out, and then someone comes with this fatally, fatherly, nice, deep voice, oh, come on, you will make it. Where there's a will, there's a way.
Mm-hmm.
I don't like that sentence because, and now it's a word for to put in a sentence, willpower is a depletable resource.
Mm.
I say that again. Willpower is a depletable resource. And so many people judge themselves that they don't have enough discipline or their willpower is not strong enough to go through it. Willpower is a depletable resource, and it's part of the conscious mind. So when you are tired, stressed, hungry, sick, or any other reasons which make you overall weak, the willpower gets depleted even quicker. Quicker is the last word to put in.
Well, that's true, and I've never heard it phrased that way, but that really makes sense because your willpower can only last so long until you give up.
Yes.
You know, I tried to say no, I tried to not have that drink or that potato chip or whatever it is, and it becomes depletable. You just can't sustain that. That's a real,
exactly.
I love the way that phrase.
Yeah, and especially with people dieting, most people can stick with their diet throughout the whole day. They start great in the morning, they have a healthy breakfast, they have a healthy lunch, they don't snack in the afternoon. But as soon as they come home after a long, hard work day and commuting and they become tired, what happens? They switch on their TV and out of the window goes the willpower and the diet.
Yes, that's right.
It's biology. It's nothing to blame someone about or creating the belief I just have lack of discipline so I
mm-hmm.
can't reach my goals. It's simple biology. So don't beat yourself up about that.
That's really, I love this point. I think this is a great point that willpower is a depletable resource. I think you should put a TM after that because you like doing that. Sylvie, I think this is a good place for us to break. It's also
okay.
a place to titillate people to make sure they listen to the rest of the recording, and it won't be as long as
90 seconds.
We're going to talk about the iceberg change model and insights that you want to take out of this class. So it'll be very important. So rather than try to cram it all into an hour, which we can't do, or leave anything else out, which I don't want to do, I'm going to wrap this up. Thank you, Sylvia, for this part. And if you're listening to the live show, the recorded show, the next part will also be up. By the time you get done with this show, that recorded show will be up. And those of you that are listening,
60 seconds.
It's already up on the site now as well. So let's say adios for the moment, and then we'll record the second one separately. Be sure and find that at EFT.com/media. You can go to the archives and find it there. So it's proeft.com. I think I said it wrong. proeft.com/media.html/media. Just go to the front, my front page, and you can find it at proeft.com. All right, I'm going to call that a wrap, and I will see you in just a couple of minutes, Sylvia, and we'll record the rest, okay?
Perfect. Wonderful.
All right, thanks.
Thank you for using Blog Talk Radio.